So now we have Marissa A. McCool, whose speech is titled "The Purple Amazon's Incomplete Guide to Surviving in the Worst Possible Timeline." So Marissa Alexa McCool, also known as the Purple Amazon, is the author of 9 books, host of over 350 podcasts, a performer, an athlete, and a public speaker. With a speaking style that blends the academic with the theatrical, she brings her unique story and perspective to her activism and presentations. She's a graduate student in the Twin Cities, where she lives with her family. All right, let's welcome Marissa Alexa McCool.
Come into locations like this and conferences like this, and then somebody's just like, who let the theater queer in here? As you can tell by how I dress, I'm tall. but I'm called the Purple Amazon because, I don't know, reasons that have never been explained to me, I suppose. But like I said, I'm a theater kid, I'm a performer, and my experience comes out of that perspective, as well as my last 4 years or so as an atheist community podcaster, activist, speaker, and someone who tends to draw a bit of hate. So when I speak and some of the things I say, I'm not talking about people in this room necessarily. I'm probably going to say at least one thing that pisses you off, and I'm okay with that. And hopefully you are too. The best advice I've ever gotten is if you hear someone from a marginalized community say something that makes you feel defensive, stop, take a step back, and figure out why. Why do you feel defensive? Why is what that person says bothering me? Then maybe reapproach it. We all have biases. We all have preconceived notions. And the atheist community is not bereft of that, so my story really starts on October 3rd, 2016, where I was a senior at the University of Pennsylvania. I came out as transgender, on video, while screaming in the face of a Westboro-like hate preacher. He was on campus to tell the women that they needed to get back in the kitchen instead of doing all that fancy book learning stuff meant for menfolk. 1 month later, when UPenn's arguably most famous alum was elected president by getting 3.5 million less votes than his opponent, I realized how shit my timing is. Not the best time to be coming out as one of the most targeted and hated marginalized identities, but then I just wrote a book where the first words were "fuck you," and I felt better. A little bit. And that's kind of been my mantra ever since. I'm not here to debate who I am or what I am, and I pretty much just say fuck you if that's the discussion you want to have. Sorry. Some people can do that. Some people want to do that. So, it would be easy to say that the moment in our history of electing a racist, sexist, bigot president took me by surprise, but I live in this country, so I'd be lying. And it would be just as easy to continue to be mystified by the fact that people are emboldened by blatant bigotry and theocratic wet dreams, continuing to refuse to see the humanity of people suffering who don't look like they do. But again, have you looked around? These people didn't just spring out of the ground 4 years ago. They've always been here. And some of us have been their targets when people weren't paying attention. So, that happens. This isn't the world we live in. People are suffering right now. And at least more people are aware of it, I hope. And if you haven't noticed by now, it's really not my fault if you're not paying attention, but maybe skepticism shouldn't be reserved for people telling their stories of abuse and discrimination. Crazy notions, I know. But the world, this community and this country can be better than it is. Being aspirational doesn't have to detach ourselves from our view of reality in this worst possible timeline. We need to keep our eyes on the way we hope things can become while acknowledging the way they are. Because not doing so, in terms of encroaching Christianity in America, is a good part of how we got here in the first place. That, however, does not excuse our own community for apathy, smugness, or thinking ourselves impervious to bigotry. Wanting the world to be better when it's not does not exempt us from doing our part to make it better for everyone, not just ourselves. So as they said in the introduction, my name is Marissa Alexa McCool, and I've been an atheist podcaster since 2016. I've spoken at many conventions and conferences just like this one over the past few years. I am a transgender person, but this talk will not be exclusively about that. It may come as a shock to some people, but true diversity and representation don't just come from getting marginalized communities to talk about the fact that they're part of a marginalized community. While I acknowledge the importance of establishing a perspective in those terms, I can talk about more things than my identity. I have 3 degrees, and exactly 0 of them are in being trans. If you're inviting the cisgender heterosexual white men to speak on the issues of the world, but only inviting women, queer folks, and people of color to speak on being women, queer folks, and people of color, what are you really communicating with that structure? Representation isn't just about visibility, it's about application. It's about bringing voices to the table who may go against the societal grain, but also acknowledging they may know something about that societal grain because they have to live it every day and be reminded that they go against it. This is important to remember, like I said, both in general and in the atheist community while surviving in this worst possible timeline. I've been to far too many places, heard far too many podcasts, and received far too much hate mail to believe this isn't a problem within our own walls. We can do better. We should do better. I believe we are capable of doing better. And places like this, judging from the first 2 speeches and the people I've met, are. And I commend them for that. But to pretend that these biases don't exist because it's for members of our own community does far more harm than good. And it's not about supposedly ruining atheism with social justice or competing in some sort of mythical oppression Olympics. It's about knowing that we should be better than that. It's about knowing that we can be better than that. But if we pretend that we already are, and none of these problems exist within atheism, where does that lend us any credibility when speaking to the general populace on issues associated with Christianity and mainstream religion? If we're going to yell at them for perpetuating racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, and other bigotry under the guise of Christianity and religious freedom, we also can't ignore the calls coming from inside the house. We can't also excuse the behavior of our favorite names just because they're supposedly on our side. We have to do better than that. In the early 2010s, it was a lot easier to think that the power of religious fundamentalism in America was waning, that we were moving toward a more secular society, the kind that our secular community has been advocating for since its existence. Then we got Restoration of Religious Freedom Acts, or RFRAs. They had emotional consequences or economic consequences, or, you know, places would refuse to go there for trying to legislate where people can go to the fucking bathroom. Blatantly bigoted and unconstitutional laws were struck down by the courts, thanks to people like the person who preceded me up here. The Pat Robertsons and Fred Phelps of the country didn't seem so scary, so much as they were funny, clinging to the last threads of a religious supremacy that was finding fewer and fewer places to cling. That was a nice time. It wasn't true, but it was nice. It was a less stressful time, at least in those terms. But if we still think that's where it is as a community, we're wearing the same rose-colored glasses that we accuse the Christian supremacists of donning. We saw in 2016 where apathy gets us, I hope. We saw where the inability to acknowledge the seeds of dangerous plants growing in our midst gets us, I hope. I really hope we see that now, of what can happen by not giving a shit. That's what I want an atheist community to be, and in parts it is. Here in the worst possible timeline, and it's worse for some than others, I want our community to be able to see the crimes against humanity done in the name of religious freedom. We can't stay silent about issues of encroaching theocracy, be they big or small. Patrick mentioned Trinity Lutheran. And a lot of atheists didn't take that seriously because it was just playgrounds, it was just tires. Is that really a big deal in the grand scheme? Yeah, it is. Establishing the precedent that federal money or state money meant for non-religious organizations can go to religious institutions, it doesn't just stop at playgrounds. These groups don't pay taxes, and they also ignore the rules of what is legal in terms of political involvement, and that's dangerous. Allowing federal dollars or state dollars or money that is from taxes to go to the repairing of a religiously owned playground set the precedent for religious schools, daycares, and businesses getting federal money on top of the dark money and donor funds that they already don't have to disclose due to the magic of religion. These are places that don't have to follow rules like reporting sexual assault to the authorities or complying with anti-discrimination laws. Schools that can kick out students and teachers for daring to exist while gay, that's not okay. And it's easy to say, well, then just don't work there. But if that's really the best we can do as a community while witnessing this grossly anti-constitutional bigotry in action, what are we trying to live up to? What potential are we seeking? If all we really want to do as a community is feel superior to people who believe Noah's Ark literally happened, what motivation is there for someone who is entrenched in that community, who may have found the seeds of doubt, and may be questioning, and may be risking leaving their entire family and the community around them? Why would they risk that by leaving it to join us? If we're not creating a community that is designed to support those who are escaping, say, cults, or who have been thrown out of their families for being gay or trans, what is our purpose? The atheist community is founded on reason, logic, science, and breaking the hold of religious supremacy on our institutions. But if we stop asking questions about ourselves when we get the God question right, why should anyone take us seriously? If we want to congratulate ourselves on being smarter than everybody else while doing nothing to support those affected by those institutions and espousing the same bigotry marginalized communities are facing under the name of Jesus, except supposedly using logic and reason as our excuses, then we won't survive as a community. If white men are the only ones talking, it's highly unlikely that means that they're the only ones who are experts in the room. We can't condemn religion for upholding white supremacy and patriarchy if we allow the same transgressions to take place in our own movement unquestioned. A lot of this may sound like I'm just endlessly bitching or that I'm really pessimistic. I'm not. Events like this one are generally where I find hope for the future of this community. A lot of the folks in atheism, secularism, and humanism are doing a lot of good in this world, and that deserves to be highlighted. Given the lineup of speakers that, for some reason, I'm allowed to join, like I looked at that list of names and went, they let me come here? Did they ever listen to anything I've said? I don't know. I'm just a girl who yells fuck a lot. Am I allowed to be here? But I'd say that the people in this conference are doing a great job. Both the speakers and everybody who is here, I've been really impressed. So everything, as I said before, everything I'm saying isn't directed at you specifically, but reflecting on these last 4 years of feeling exhausted, beaten down, and targeted, it's not from anyone in this room necessarily, but it is speaking from daring to appear on an atheist show on YouTube and receiving such vile comments that I deleted Twitter altogether. It's from going through an election where the running mate was notorious for his anti-queer views, and Schmucka LaRange makes jokes about how Mike Pence wants us to be hanged. That shit's not funny. It's from the result of that election making a lot of us run to this community, only to find that some of the leaders were perfectly willing to throw us under the bus to find common grounds with the other side's extremists. Sure, they might be white supremacist fundamentalist Christians, supposedly what this community hates, but we can both make jokes about how weird those trans folks are, right, Bill Maher? I'm exhausted. I really am. I can't enjoy anything in entertainment, it seems, because I'm always on the edge just waiting to see how I'm eventually used as a punchline. I'm hesitant to join any atheist groups online, as it's very quickly apparent that I'm not welcome there. And on that note, this is the only thing I'm going to say about a certain issue that gets brought up every 6 days or so. I'm a trans athlete. I play football. The rules say I can play. There's nothing I can do about it. The rules say I can play, so I play on my team. I'm not the trans one. I'm just Marissa McCool, that chick with the purple hair, and that's literally how easy it is to not be an asshole. Don't be an asshole. It's really not that hard, and it's what most of us are asking. I really wish the atheist community could have been a place of refuge for a lot of people. People who are abused by the religiously influenced bigotry and hatred. But the values of ending religion's poison on culture and thought seem to suddenly go out the window when it's not just about making fun of how many inconsistencies there are in the Bible. There are, and we do. But it can't stop there. It can't just stop at being smug at supposedly how much smarter we are than everybody else. Once you get the God question right, if you just go, well, I'm done. Nothing in the last 30 years that I learned in religion or in a religious country has had any effect on me whatsoever. I just wiped my tabula rasa clean. No religious influence at all. You're kidding yourself. You just switch out the words, it tends to be the same arguments. I've personally conversed with a not insignificant amount of people who came to the atheist community to escape sexism and misogyny and bigotry and found that they were treated the exact same way. And we can do better than that. And we should know better. I've seen it, albeit in smaller samples. I've seen what we can be. I've seen it in conferences like this with people like you. I want it to be more like this and less like some of the well-known leaders of this community who side with bigots and sexual assaulters, or who are bigots and sexual assaulters. Somehow, if we're finding common ground with Jordan B. Peterson, a guy who is a fundamentalist Christian who thinks women deserve to be sexually harassed for wearing red lipstick, but, you know, he hates those SJWs on Twitter, so we have common ground with that. Are we really about atheist and secular values? People who are willing to make a swipe at the Catholic Church for their systematic protection of rapists, but when it's one of our own, we are quick to make the same excuses, vilify the victim, and harass them into leaving online platforms. If we're pissed when that happens to Dr. Ford, but perpetuate it when it's our own favorite voice in the community, what are we hoping to accomplish? I have interviewed some amazing people and made some wonderful friends in this community. One of them is my girl Mandisa, who's speaking later tonight. And we've shared a stage in about 4 different states now. And we've spoken at the same event so many times that I've lost track. I've had her on my shows. I've been on her 5th Tuesday radio show. She's one of the best people I've ever met, and I know her because of this community. I'd rather listen to Mandisa over someone who sues a skeptic convention for talking about the sexual misconduct he admitted to just in order to drain their funding fighting it in court. We were all once bigoted in many ways. We've hopefully grown out of them, but we'll continue to make mistakes, and we need to learn from them. I speak as a we because I'm not here as some sage on a stage in this regard, but one of the many in this community. When atheism is regarded in the mainstream media, they're referring to all of us. If one of our more prominent voices is repeatedly accused of sexual misconduct but gets protected from within, do you think they care to distinguish between which atheists are and aren't standing with them? When a famous atheist says something racist or sexist in a public forum, do you really think those who are questioning their faith and maybe considering trying to find a new community where they'll feel safe are more eager to come to a place if they're just going to be vilified here too? I've seen atheists make a huge fuss over simply having a harassment policy and a set of convention guidelines. That is not what I want atheism to be, and I hope it's not what you want it to be either. But if you don't believe me, just go into any mainstream atheist Facebook page or YouTube channel and just read for a few minutes. Read those comments, something I can't do, because when you're a content creator, especially, the best advice you can get is don't read the comments. When you see atheists siding with someone, with people who are racist, sexist bigots, who make names for themselves comparing trans people's pronouns to being thrown in the gulags, why would you bother to engage in that community? Why would I even bother to even try to join it? The second I say anything, I'm going to be piled on with hundreds of comments calling me anything from a snowflake to slurs I'm not going to mention here. The keys to surviving in this timeline are community, connections, and establishing the fact that religion doesn't have exclusivity on those. They don't, and we need to make sure that we have our community visible, because when it is wonderful. And people remember stories and people, and they associate those memories with us. We can be better than just trolling people, or just being mean, or smug, or holier than thou. We can do that. We can all do that. We can all do better at that, and we can all do better at calling it out. I'm going to tell you some more positive stories from this community, because I'm going to balance it out a little bit. I don't come up here with just criticism, the bitch, but this community has done amazing things, and I've met some amazing people in it. I'm generally a very happy person, but I'm weighed down and exhausted for many of the reasons I've shared with you tonight. I've traveled all over the country to speak and spend time with our community, as I've explained, and I want to tell you about some of the places I've been and people I've met along the way. They, like all of you, are reasons I have hope for a better future for this country and our community. It's definitely a jaded hope, but a hope nonetheless. I was at ReasonCon 3 in Hickory, North Carolina, which apparently is a town. One of my best friends in the community, Callie Wright, used the end of their speech to propose to their partner, because that was the time when the backlash from HB2 was at its height. If you don't know what that is, I don't blame you, because that bill has been followed by a million clones of it since 2017. It was defiant. It was beautiful. Shelley Siegel, who, if you don't know by now, you should, made a surprise appearance to sing a song while they hugged for several minutes. A year later, at another atheist convention in Nashville, NanoCon, we were all in the same place anyway, so we all went to their wedding the next day. A gay trans wedding on a farm in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, surrounded by an atheist community that wasn't asking what chromosomes either one of them had or making attack helicopter jokes, but coming together to celebrate love in one of its many forms. Religion doesn't have an exclusive right to love, marriage, celebrating marriage, any more than they do on morality and human rights. At that wedding was someone I also met at ReasonCon 3 and many times thereafter. Her nickname was Heretic Woman. She approached me at my book booth and asked if she could buy one of my books for the trans daughter she adopted. I'm now friends with that daughter, Sam, and it wouldn't have been possible without Heretic Woman. I was on her show twice, and her daughter came out of her shell to be on it with me. She had bright red hair and always made distinguishable wardrobe choices, something I can't relate to at all. At that wedding, she gave me a hug I can only describe as legendary, and I had no idea it would be the last time I would see her. She passed away last year, shocking us all, and leaving my friend feeling like an orphan. It shook the community so much that another person I know and have spent time with, No Illusions, also known as Scathing Atheist, substituted his weekly diatribe on his podcast to give one of the most sincere, heartfelt monologues I've ever heard in my life. When I heard someone who is normally filled with righteous anger and spitting fire deliver such emotional words about someone we only had the privilege to know because of this community, I knew not all had been lost to the negativity that I've mentioned tonight. Noah's wife, Lucinda, who stands a towering 4'6", was one of the first people in the community to reach out to me after my public coming out. She invited me to her home, shared drinks with me on Facebook Live, and attended a performance of the Vagina Monologues, in which I performed as well as a convention that was 5 hours away. The two of us standing next to each other was hilarious. I always said we should be a tag team, and I could pick her up and throw her at people. She is one of my favorite people in the world. I call her Lala. She delivers a weekly segment on the Scathing Atheist called This Week in Misogyny. And that 4'6" stature has an amazing, powerful voice, and it stands taller than anyone I know. Noah's co-host, Eli Bosnick, was another one of the people who reached out to me even before I came out publicly. He took time out of his own honeymoon with his lovely wife, Anna, to give me advice, and has taken every opportunity that I've known to stand up for people like me along with the rest of that cast. If those guys and gals can do it, so can you. If you're not using the privilege you have to speak up for the marginalized, you're part of the problem. It's not just about when we're around, it's when your friends are making jokes because they trust you to not be offended by it, because they feel safe being an asshole around you. That's when it's important to call that shit out. not when we're standing there and it's performative, but when we're not there. That's not to mention all the podcasting co-hosts I've had over these past 4 years. Bethany, who co-hosted Inciting Incident with me for over 100 episodes, and is one of the wittiest, most intelligent, and compassionate people I've ever met. I ran into her at a live god-awful movie show in Chicago. Ari Stillman, who I also met there shortly thereafter while co-hosting the Gaytheist Manifesto with the aforementioned Callie Wright, started a new show with me in April 2017, and we've been going ever since. We recently added a new co-host, Eli, different Eli, who blew me away at Skepticon 2017 in Springfield, Missouri, by saying they'd been following my work when I finally had the guts to approach them and gush about how awesome I thought they were. Amy, whose podcast I helped get started and produced at the beginning, I now share an hour-long geek-out session about the show Fargo with, and is one of the people I can actually see on a somewhat regular basis, because she also lives in Minnesota. Maddie Love and Hertzy Hertz of Minnesota Atheists, who I've spoken at their events, and I also met at that GAM show, hired me to produce two holiday specials for Atheist Talk, a radio show in Minnesota. And there's so many other people that I've had on my shows, people who I would not otherwise have had the privilege to have a conversation with, but thanks to this community. Churches have community because of location and time. They're able to drill that in over years. We don't have that advantage, but we do have the people who seem to be willing to do it. Sunday Assembly was, I met the founder. I spoke at a convention with her in Lakewood, California. Getting together once a week, it's been tarnished by religion, but being a part of a community, being a part of a group working toward a better cause, Christianity doesn't have a stranglehold on that. There are amazing, generous people in this community. One of the podcasts that I've worked with raised a third of $1 million recently for charity. Religion doesn't get to have exclusivity on that either. Atheists raise money for charity and do charitable works all the time, but we don't force them to read a Bible before they're allowed to eat. We should be talking about that, not how stupid we think their beliefs are. And that, you know, we all have those times where we're just listening to someone speak about some religious thing they learned and we're like, are you fucking serious right now? And we can have those conversations, and we should. But it can't stop there. It can't end at just us feeling superior to others. Because if we want them to come to our community, they risk leaving their family. They risk leaving the community they may have been born into and spent their entire life in. That's scary. And it can be dangerous for people who are part of some of the more religious or the more extreme sects. I'm very close to some of them. There are so many more people I could mention. I've been to so many of these conventions all over the country. And one of the ones I feel like geeking out about at the moment is my personal hero, former NFL punter Chris Cluey, who is a shining example of what it's like to use your privilege. When you're a straight white dude from California and you're in the NFL making a lot of money, and you see that your home state is about to pass a law banning same-sex marriage, you speak up. And he did. And he got driven out of the NFL basically for it. That's using your privilege. That's standing up for people, even if you don't know them. And some queer activist podcaster was interviewing him on election night. And about 6 days later, came out to him and asked him to write the foreword to my first book. And he did. This list, though, would be incomplete without telling you about the three people closest to me in my life, my family. Aiden went with me to many of these events and so many more that I don't have time to mention. We've been interviewed together. We've been interviewed in our own podcast studio. We've also been on the receiving end of one of my favorite jokes. It was the Super Bowl in 2017, and we were at No Illusions' house, and Eli Bosnick noticed that George H.W. Bush was being rolled out on the field in his wheelchair, and Eli said, "Remember when we thought that was the worst it could get? I would do anything to have him back now. I'd commit a hate crime against Aiden to have him instead of who we have now." And Aiden's like, "Hell, man." And No Illusions is just like, "Come on, man, take one for the team." Amazing how you can make a joke about a trans person without making their transness the punchline, right? We've been together since 2014, and we got married in 2016. Devin, who not only knew who I was because of my podcast, but listening to it as they recovered in a hospital alone for a long time because they left a cult. They left a cult in deep South Texas, where they had to never cut their hair and wear jean skirts to their ankles. And they got out, and because of that, they were alone. They heard I was coming to a show in Seattle and make sure they got a chance to meet me, and moved out with me and my family 2 months later. We've been together for 3 years and got married at Skepticon this past year in St. Louis. And yes, I'm married to more than one person. And like I said some earlier, you know, I don't give a shit what the state says. It may not recognize it, but the state, their stamp on a piece of paper means nothing when they can go out of their way to try to legislate against my existence. And finally, my partner Murph, who, if you can't tell by our matching hair and outfits, is here with me tonight. There's a cliche in lesbian relationships called the U-Haul lesbian, and we're not that. We spent 2 months after matching on Tinder just talking, but the first time they heard my voice was by downloading one of my podcasts before they met me. They tell me that's when they melted and fell in love with me. They're moving in with me this month, and we started our own podcast together as well. We've been together for almost a year. Atheism and my activism within it is responsible for the three people in my life whom I love the most and probably fills out the rest of the top 25 and beyond as well. This community can be amazing, and there are countless people in it who are always learning, always trying to do better, always trying to reach out to others, and always doing the best they can. I have no doubt that those of you I've met and will meet here in Madison will be among the examples I'm giving to a new crowd a few years from now, when I'm telling them about the potential of this community and the amazing people who are a part of it. Is it everything it can be? No. Is it where it should be? No. Is it the community we need going into the future? Not yet, but it can be. And I believe the people in this room tonight, both on stage and in the crowd, are part of what it can be, and I'm beyond humbled to have the opportunity to speak with you here tonight. We can survive this timeline. We can get out of this, but not alone. Not without introspection. Not without checking ourselves. Not just the religious. I'm going to close with a story that everybody always asks me about. It's one I've told on Cognitive Dissidence, The Scathing Atheist, and a million other times it's been asked, but it's my favorite story to tell, and I mentioned it in the beginning. On October 3rd, 2016, I saw a vile, Westboro-like hate preacher screaming at children through a bullhorn, calling them slurs, using the name of religion to shame them for things like existing as a woman and having an exposed shoulder or being brown or part of a religion that wasn't his. I recognized, as a 31-year-old person at the time, there was nothing this clown could say to me that would get under my skin, but he was ruining the days of teenagers, of kids who were just trying to go to school. And I realized if I distracted him and kept his words coming toward me, it may mean that was that many fewer days he could ruin. So I did, for an hour and a half. I did nothing but troll him, saying things like, "Well, you supposedly have a degree in the Bible, but had to highlight passages. What if the person who made that highlighter was gay? You've desecrated the Bible with the homo highlighter. Maybe you're going to hell." Finally, he asked if anyone had the guts to be judged on the Bible. I handed my phone to the person next to me and said, "Film this." He asked me a bunch of questions on which he would judge from a scale of 1 to 10 how much I was going to hell. 1 being heaven, 10 being definitely going to hell. It was filled with ridiculousness and over the top. If I ever had premarital sex, "Oh, you're a sex addict." If I have ever drank an alcohol, "Oh, you're a drunkard." If I teach my kids the gay agenda. After 5 minutes, he said, "On a scale of 1 to 10, you're a 9. You're going to hell, but at least you're honest about it, unlike the rest of the people here. I said, you want me to make it a 10? I'm transgender. F*** you. Thank you. I've got time to take questions if anybody has any.
Yeah, usually you have a podcast. How long have you been doing it?
Since 2016. I did a show called the Inciting Incident Podcast from 2016 to 2019. I now host a trans-specific podcast called The Cis Are Getting Out of Hand. It's a satire show. I host a show called Okay Then, which is just about geeking out over the show Fargo. And I just started one with my partner called But I Heard About It. So I have hosted, like the intro said, over 350 podcast episodes, and I've been on plenty more. So if you put my name into your podcast app, you're going to find it, and a lot of others.
Chicken.
Books I've written? I've written 9 of them since 2016. The first one was 6 days after the election, which I alluded to before. The first words of it are, and I've realized I kind of undersold how bad I thought it was going to be after the election, but I was there. I was at Trump's alum. His daughter graduated a year before me, and he was at the graduation. So I was kind of the token poor kid at an Ivy League school. So I've had that experience of sort of seeing how the other class lives, of people going, I'm going to Switzerland for spring break. What are you doing? I'm going to work. I've written a couple of young adult novels. I've written several books of essays. Probably my favorite one is called Once Unspoken, which is a piece that's like the Vagina Monologues, except focused on people of color, trans people, queer people, people from other countries. I had 31 co-authors with that, including Mandisa, and that's probably the one I'm most proud of. And then I also write super gay poetry and, you know, stuff like that. But the most recent one I wrote is called Tinder Profile Poetry, and I made a fake Tinder profile and just looked at people for a while and made poems out of them. So. I've written a lot of different genres. They're all available on Amazon under my name, Marissa Alexa McCool. Anyone else? I'm not shy.
It's not really a question, but I really like to hear it.
Thank you. Well, I tend to blend in most of the time, but I'm glad it's noticed. I got the nickname Purple Amazon in December 2016 and have now realized that I have to keep it now because that nickname is awesome and I'm not losing it. So I've had purple hair for the better part of the last 4 years. Thank you.
What's your, any silver linings that you see in your eyes?
Yeah, I see a lot of them. I tried to highlight them, really. I really think people are gonna get out and change this. I really think that the electorate can be motivated. At least I hope. But at this point, even almost as is better than what we have now. And I'm hoping, if nothing else, that can be a motivating force of not having people being legislated out of existence and children thrown in cages. Like, I hope that's a standard we can do better than. The infighting doesn't always give me a lot of help, but I try to steer clear of that. But most of the hope I see is honestly from young people who are making a difference in this community. A lot of the preconceived notions that sometimes I've faced from other groups and other places that I've spoken, most of the time they're looking at me with some of these stories I had and going, really? Why? It just doesn't occur to them. That gives me a lot of hope. That some of the bigotry that I've experienced is just being cycled out. And a lot of people from my generation and older are doing a lot of work in that. There are people putting in the work and putting in the effort so that people like me aren't always having to do 101 at places like this. We can show up and actually talk about other things. We can contribute to the conversation rather than just going, oh, well, I'm trans. And that's beneficial because it's not just about being visible in our identities. We have to bring people into the conversation, all of them. We can't just have certain groups of people discussing the issues and then bring others in to talk about their identity. That's just, that's important work to do. It's really important for people to hear that 101 and discuss it and learn from others who are willing to do it. But I would like to have other conversations than that, and that's why when I do speeches like this, that's not my topic. I have degrees in English, media studies, and anthropology. And I will have my MFA in nonfiction writing this summer. So a little bit all over the map, but I feel like studying media and anthropology has helped me be a better writer. And I encourage anybody to learn more about anthropology if they can, because when you learn that there are a lot of people who aren't like us, it gives you a lot more empathy. And getting outside of our circles, whatever they are, and learning that there are other people is so valuable to empathy.
So if you're going to give a specifically anthropology talk?
Probably. I've given a speech that's anthropology-based called The Power of Myth. And if you go to my podcast page, you can find a couple of iterations of it. It talks about the influence of modern media on our cultural myths, because people tend to associate myth as something that happened 1,000 years ago or in Greece and Rome, but Captain America is as much of a myth as is Zeus. And recognizing the way stories are written and who is allowed to be a hero and who is always painted as a villain influences the cultural conversation and mainstream thought. And that's something that I've delved into on an anthropological and media studies level. Anyone else?
I was a little bit interested in what your introduction to secularism was like, or maybe a little bit about your journey with and relationship with secularism.
I didn't really have one. I wasn't raised religious in any way, but I was raised in an extremely conservative area of Pennsylvania. The joke about Pennsylvania is that it's Philly on one side, Pittsburgh on the other, and Kentucky in the middle, and I was in the middle of Pennsylvania. So despite not being raised in religion, I had it forced on me and was forced to continually participate. Not participate as in, you know, prayer or anything like that, but forced to conform to those norms or get my ass kicked, which I did anyway. I mean, I was called a faggot for the first time at 7 years old, if that gives you an idea. So that's the culture I came from. So despite not being religious, I nonetheless have religious trauma. Becoming an activist was more about realizing that I had all these unique experiences. I was homeless and ended up getting into the Ivy League because of community college. So journeying from one world to the other and still living in Pennsylvania while going into downtown Philadelphia with names like Trump and Biden, it was quite life-shaking. So to have all of those experiences, I felt like I could contribute to the conversation. And the more I participated in this community, the more I've felt that I have to contribute, and I've used what platform I have to elevate as many people as I can and give others voices for whom I cannot speak. So that was pretty much, I was always secular, I just didn't have that word, kind of like I was always trans, and I just didn't always know. So that, like I said, I started podcasting in 2016, that was really my intro to it. I heard Scathing Atheist and Cognitive Dissonance and was like, I could do that. And I started a podcast, and you know, 4 years later, I'm still doing it. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And stay and listen to Mandisa. She's awesome. She's amazing. She has amazing things to say, and I'm proud to share a stage with her and everybody else who will be speaking here over the next couple days. Thank you.